You are listening to the Extraordinary Women Podcast, a podcast for the woman entrepreneur, where we have candid conversations about the journey of starting a business. You'll get valuable tips and advice as you launch yourself on your own entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host, Sherry Harmel, the editor of the Extraordinary Women magazine Circle. And I embrace my own entrepreneurial journey as a woman of, say, a certain age. And if I can do it, ladies, so can you. I now divide my time between Paris and Boston, which fulfills my desire to create this life reimagined while building a business I love. I am so happy you are here. So let's jump right in. Well, I wanted to introduce this week's guest, Mindy Moralia. Mindy started a fascinating business that she calls the Berkshire Camino. And if the Camino sounds familiar, you're right on target. We all know of the Camino de Santiago, which is a 500-mile walk across northern Spain. But Mindy did that walk 2 times. And when she returned, she actually came home to the Berkshires of Massachusetts and started her business. And she calls her business the Berkshire Camino. Mindy's business was birthed out of that intersection of what I call her own life experiences, the beautiful surroundings of where she lives, and an awareness of what people want in their lives, what people are needing in their lives. What a great place which to get your business idea. So join us, and I bet you are going to also start to imagine, if you're not already there, that sweet spot of you creating and building a business that is the intersection of what you love, your skills and your talents, maybe where you live, and what you think people need. Hi, Mindy. How are you today?
Hi, Sherry. I'm great. I'm so excited to meet you and have this conversation.
So am I. I just find your business, Mindy, so interesting. And I know you're going to tell us all about how it evolved. And I'm assuming it came out of your very first walk.
That's right.
Am I saying it right? Camino de Santiago.
Yeah.
So go back to that walk, because everybody has heard of it much in so many different places. And a lot of us, like myself, say, maybe someday I'll do that, but I don't think I'm in good enough shape now. But the idea of it is good. But you take us back to what got you there.
So the circumstances for that was that my life opened up and I had the time. You know, because this is something that, I mean, you could do it. You could walk just a couple of days on the Camino, a week. But if you're really going in as, you know, a pilgrim, as I was, you're planning to stay for some time.
When you say,
well, like a month or more.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've actually walked the Camino twice.
Oh.
Yeah. So the first.
Incredible.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I guess. I'm incredible.
I'll own it.
So the circumstances were, I guess, like I'll really dial it back, nearly 10 years ago. I had been living in Arizona. I had been married for a long time. I think you and I both share, you know, a little bit of a backstory in that we were married for, you know, a long time, and then, you know, had the courage to step out of something that just wasn't working anymore. And I didn't know what to do with myself. And to shorten the story, I'll say I ended up at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And so I had a relationship with that organization for a number of years as a researcher.
Okay.
Working for, you'll like this, the Kripalu Institute for Extraordinary Living.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we were looking at how mindfulness and yoga can impact people, but like doing legit research, you know, scientific research published in journals. And so I had a really steeped relationship with that organization. And it's when you arrive there, you feel like you're like brought into this womb And I felt very comfortable there. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just stay here for the rest of my career. Like, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Now I can look back and realize that that would have been so very limiting. I was feeling limited even in the capacity I was in there, but I wasn't really even admitting it.
Yeah. How in touch with your own kind of, I don't know, sense of self and also what's possible for yourself.
Right.
Because right. It's easy. Those golden handcuffs, how they come in many different forms.
Yeah. For me, it was just really being a part of this, you know, very loving community mm-hmm. where you'd walk down the hall and, you know, you not only saw people you knew and said hello, but everybody was giving one another hugs, oh, you know, wow. It's just yeah. like, oh, I want to always be here.
Was this in corporate America?
Because I know
your career in corporate America, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. So this was just a whole different way of being. And there was an issue between leadership and I and a difference of opinion about a couple of things. And before I knew it, in a very short period of time, I realized that I was on the bubble there. And I didn't feel comfortable with what was going on. And in the midst of having panic attacks for the first time in my life, I was paying attention to my body. And I was like, I don't know what the next step is. I haven't planned this out, but I feel like this door is closing and it's time to go. And so I left without a plan.
Yeah.
But while I was there, I had met some people who had walked the Camino. And I remember thinking, oh, that's such a cool thing, but I could never in a million years possibly do something like that. I don't have the endurance for it. I'm not conditioned for that. But it just rose up. I don't know. It was just sort of playing in my mind. And then there was a movie, actually a documentary that was playing in Hartford. So I had to drive about an hour to go see this film. And it was about two guys who did the Camino, one of whom is a paraplegic. And he approached his able-bodied friend he had grown up with and said, I want to go do the Camino. And his friend said, I'll push you. And that's the name of their book, their film. I encourage everybody to see it. They lead tours for disabled people on the Camino de Santiago. So you can go in a wheelchair, you can go, you know, whatever your disability is, they have volunteers that come along to assist who are able-bodied. It's amazing. And so I was driving home from that and I can viscerally remember saying, if they can do it, I can do it. Yeah. Like I just have to try. And so I told my friends and family I was going to do it and they thought I was a little bit nuts, but you know, they know I'm also like a very grounded person too. And I wasn't going to get myself into too much trouble.
Yeah.
And so I started researching and training and getting ready to go. I made that my job for a couple of months while I was getting myself ready to go. And then I went and did it the first time.
By getting ready to go, you mean like mentally, physically, even do I have the right shoes?
And right. What do you bring? There are Facebook groups, very active Facebook groups on this and other organizations that you can be a part of. There's something called American Pilgrims on the Camino. And you can learn, you know, what actually you need to bring in terms of gear and how to understand the navigation of this all. And like, there's some planning, a little bit of planning that goes into it.
Definitely.
Some people plan more. I'm a little more of I'm a researcher. So, you know, I wanted to research it and I was, you know, sort of immersed right into this world of being on the Camino, even though I wasn't even there yet.
When you got there, did you take a period of time and then start walking or did you jump right in?
I took an overnight flight from Boston to Madrid and got to Logroño, which was the start of my first Camino. And I then spent a night there sort of acclimating.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had the jet lag, the flight night, and then one night, and then the next day, you know, I left and I was all by myself and which is not uncommon. You know, a lot of people do this, particularly women are doing this as a solo journey.
Hey, ladies, listen to that. That's it.
Yeah. Really, and I just started walking and I remember thinking, oh, it was sort of early and there weren't a lot of places open to get breakfast. And I thought, well, there'll be a place, you know, down the way. I'm not going to worry about it. And I started walking with another guy who had a backpack. I mean, you know, you can sort of suss one another out like, oh, you're walking the Camino. So I said something about, oh yeah, I'm going to get breakfast a little bit down the way. And he said, I'm going to teach you your very first Camino lesson. You never do that. Don't wait for something better to come. take what's in front of you right here. You should have had breakfast at the first place that you saw, and that would have served you well. And he was right, because I didn't get breakfast that day, and I had to walk several hours until I got to a place where I could have a proper meal.
What a life lesson, though.
So many life lessons all along the way. And really? I have incorporated them not only into how I walk in the world, but how I have created and how I manage this business.
Yeah. So you walked it on the walk. First of all, did you ever think of quitting while you were walking?
There were really hard days. I never thought of quitting, but I longed for when the pain and the suffering and the fatigue would be done, because it pushed me way out of my comfort zone. Wow. But I tell people that's what you've got to do. Like sometimes in life, we need some things that happen that push us out of the comfort zone. Like, I've heard a few of your podcasts and you talked about, going to Paris, like that takes you out of your comfort zone. That's how we know who we are, That's how we can really see our strength, our gifts, the areas where we're weak. Like we really know who we are. When we're going about our normal daily life, we're not pushing the boundaries enough.
No. And it's very difficult to embrace, at the very beginning, we talked about you incredible and extraordinary. It's really hard to embrace that when we don't push ourselves out of the comfort zone. And when we do it, and I'm sure you felt that way at the end, you're like, I did it.
I mean, I walked from Logroño to where everyone is walking is a city in northwestern Spain called Santiago de Compostela.
Okay.
And there's a cathedral there that's the end point. Some would argue that it actually continues on to the coast to Finisterre, which is Land's End. And some people also continue that. But most people at the very least are aiming for the cathedral. And there's this big plaza.
Wow.
And I happened to meet a man named Roger, who was from Belgium. I had walked on and off with him. I saw him here and there, while I was walking my Camino. And that morning, magically or not, because Camino magic happens all along the way, we saw one another at the beginning of the walk. And we thought, wow, how delightful. Maybe we'll walk into the plaza together. But he was a much faster walker. He was a cigarette smoker, Coca-Cola drinker, and he would take off. He'd be way out ahead of me and I would keep catching up to him. He would wait for me at a cafe and then he'd let me get a little ahead. And we kept going like this the whole day. And I got to a point where I was so exhausted and so hot because it was late June and my phone was almost out of power. And I didn't want to walk into the plaza and not be able to take a picture, or some photo of myself doing that, right?
Yes.
And so I stayed behind just a little bit at a church along the way, charged my phone, rehydrated a little bit, and then walked in. And I was so depleted. I never found him again. It was so sad. I've never found him. We had never exchanged information.
Okay.
But I walked into the plaza and as you're coming down, you come down some stairs and through a little tunnel and there's often a bagpiper there and you hear the bagpiper as you're approaching. And people who've done some research on this know when you hear the bagpipes, you're there, so it's like there's the soundtrack behind you as you come into this emotional moment. And I came around the corner and I was holding up the phone. I took a video of myself and, I just said, I think I said I made it or something like that. And I just burst into tears. Like I didn't know what was going to happen, But wow, it was just so incredible.
So on that walk though, did you get answers to, what's next for me? Sounds like that's what drew you to this walk. How many miles is it?
Well, so I walked 250 miles on that walk.
Lord.
If you walk the entire, so there's different Caminos, there's different routes. Some of them are in Spain, some of them are in Portugal, some of them start all the way in France and other countries. Mm-hmm. The most known Camino, which has the most infrastructure on it, meaning hostels and cafes and, support for pilgrims, as they're called, is called Camino Francés, which starts in the Pyrenees in a tiny little but beautiful town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. Probably not saying that very well. And that's not where I started. I started about 10 days in from that.
Okay.
And then I hopscotched a little bit because I only had so much time until I had to get back. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to walk into Santiago. And if you walk the last 100 kilometers, which is about 62 miles, then you get a certificate that says that you walk the Camino. It doesn't matter that if you walk 500 miles prior to that, it's right. just if you walk that last section. I know. And so I wanted to achieve that, but I gave up the expectation of that along the way on that walk. I let it go. I was like, you know what? I don't have to get the silly certificate. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, but then I started walking and I thought, you know, I'm just going to see how far I get. And then I'll just take a taxi into Santiago if that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm. But as I was getting closer, it was like, there was this beacon, you know, pulling me. And I just pushed way beyond what I ever thought I could do. Mm-hmm. And I dug in and I did it.
Yeah. It's just incredible. But those of you that are listening, there's one of the lessons I think Mindy is sharing with us here is just do it. You know, that old Nike phrase, you know, or tagline or whatever, just do it. We only make things happen by taking action. We don't make things happen by sitting back in Boston, Massachusetts, I'm talking to myself, thinking walking the Camino. It's actually doing it. And you don't know where you're going to end up or how far, or how successful, right?
Yeah, you don't. And, you know, you can let fear stop you. You know, fear stops us from doing all sorts of things. And I guess I had already taken that first big leap of walking, you know, out of the relationship I had been in and the very comfortable job and home. I lived in Arizona. I had a very nice house. I sold the house. When I moved to Kripalu, I lived in a dorm, you know, in a bunk bed, you know. Right. So like that had already sort of set me up for, oh, you know what, you can take big leaps and do things that you never thought were like who you are. And so that really set me up to be able to take that leap. I didn't want my Camino to end. That's part of why I went back.
Really? Yeah. Oh, so you did the first one in 2017, did you?
18.
18. Yeah. And when did you do the second one?
I went back 14 months later.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to start in Saint-Jean. I wanted to go the whole way, quote unquote. Okay. And so now at this point, I already was thinking about the business. Like it.
Were you?
It was, yeah, I was already like working on this concept. But at that time, what I thought it was going to be was creating a network of hostels in the Berkshires so that there would be economical places for people who were doing through hikes through the Berkshires to be able to stay.
Okay.
And we'll come back to that. We'll put that on the parking lot for now and come back. So I wanted to go back and research the hostels a little bit more, understand that model.
Okay.
But I also just longed to be back on the Camino. And I always felt like, wow, what if I had started in Saint-Jean? Like, I wonder, like, you know, I saw those pilgrims that went the whole way through and I wanted to see, well, maybe I could do the 500 miles. So I went back and I started in Saint-Jean and my commitment was to not take transport, to shorten the distance, just to keep going. Again, I made it 250 miles. And that's just what my body has in it. I mean, that was a big part of the lesson. And I have all sorts of physical challenges. I have flat feet that causes all sorts of problems. Yeah.
200.
Especially if you're trying to walk long distances.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Technically, I have fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, which, you know, I do better at and worse at over time. And, you know, I'm in a much better place now, but I've had times when I was, you know, really overwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. Hence the reason why my friends and family thought, wow, that's a lot for you to take on, you know? So I want everybody listening to know it's not like, oh, well, she's, you know, she's just one of those super athletic people and, you know, really fit. And no, when I've got extra pounds on me and, you know, yeah. But
you did it both times.
I did it. Yeah. I was injured, you know, the second, I hurt myself the first time, but I really injured myself, my Achilles tendon, among other things.
The second time or the first?
Second time. Second. Well, I mean, the Achilles, I injured it a bit the first time, but I was able to walk with it taped up. But by the second time, you know, it's just, that's my Achilles heel is my Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
And I had had a really rough night the night before. I stayed in a hostel that I thought was going to be lovely, but as it turned out, it was infested with mice. And that's really the rarity. So I don't want people listening to think, oh my God, like I'm not going to go.
Freaked out right now.
But, you know, now and then it can happen. And
so be prepared.
Yeah, there were mice that had gotten into my backpack. It just freaked me out. I woke up and really out of sorts that morning, but I was really in pain and I was really pushing it. I got to a point where I just sat on a bench. I was like, I have to surrender here. I don't know what the answer is, but I know I can't keep walking to that next town. And it was early on a Sunday morning. And I just said, I can't imagine that a taxi is going to come by here, but I'm just asking for Camino magic. Like I need the taxi to come. And within minutes, a taxi came and pulled up and stopped.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, and it was Camino messaging too, that this is it. You know,
that I was done. Yeah. Yeah. The universe knew. Yeah. She really means it. Like she really does need,
and the mic,
she really does need the ride.
Whole shebang, you know,
the whole shebang. Yeah. I mean, I had been getting therapy, physical therapy along the way. I had taken some time off. Like I was, you know, I had pushed it way beyond.
Yeah.
But I know exactly where that bench is. Mm. And my goal is to go back, I think in 2024, when I turn 60.
Ooh.
Yep. And I want to start right there.
There.
I want to start at that bench.
Yeah. Yeah. And go the direction.
Go the rest.
Another 250 miles. So,
that's right. That's right.
So go back though, because you mentioned about the business and how, first of all, share with everyone what the business is today. And then we'll go back to how it evolved into becoming that.
So Berkshire Camino curates and leads single day and multi-day walking and hiking excursions in the Berkshires. The Berkshires is in Western Massachusetts. And on our walks, we lift up the story, the narrative about the Berkshires. We share a little bit about the history, culture. Of course, you're immersed in the nature. This is a beautiful place.
Yeah, share a little bit, because a lot of people in other parts of the country don't know the Berkshires of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, we border New York State. So we're as far west as you can get in Massachusetts. And we're about equidistant from New York City in Boston.
Okay.
And it's like a playground for people from those cities to come. And, you know, people are drawn to the natural beauty. It's very forested here. A couple hundred years ago, they took down much of the forest because it was being used to create coal and furniture and paper and all the stuff that you needed the trees for. And, you know, over time now that's come back. And there are some organizations in the Berkshires that are dedicated to conserving the land. So they buy the land and put it into conservation so that it can never be developed and it can only be used for whatever purposes they determine, often for recreational purposes.
Right.
And one of those organizations is called Berkshire Natural Resources Council.
Okay.
And they had announced a project called the High Road, which they themselves promoted as being like the Camino de Santiago. So here I'm aware of the Camino and I'm thinking about walking it. And I hear that they want to build this thing in the Berkshires. And, you know, so my ears perked up. You know, what I've learned is it's a very slow process for them to actually piece together this whole network that they're endeavoring to have here in the Berkshires.
Okay.
But the first section has opened. It's called the High Road Yokin Ridge, and Berkshire Camino leads a walk on that segment. And we're very much in communication. So, you know, we keep each other informed about, hey, you know, you could navigate this way or that way. You know, our intentions are a little different. You know, they're trying to create a trail system and I'm not. I'm trying to create an experience using trail systems. But sometimes a trail system doesn't exist where I want one. And so I just created it. So we're going to walk through this town and we're going to cut through the woods here and we're going to take this country road.
Beautiful.
So I've created a way to do this walk.
Guided or people on their own?
It's all guided. There are no signposts. So for comparison, when you walk the Camino in Spain, not only are there guidebooks and apps, there are at the very least spray painted yellow arrows everywhere.
Oh.
There are medallions on the streets in the cities. There are signs, like it's very well marked. And there are hundreds of thousands of people walking. So you just sort of join the flow, right?
Okay.
But here, if you showed up to do a Berkshire Camino walk, you wouldn't have the slightest idea where to go. There are no signs. There's no guidebook. There's no app. I mean, maybe one day we'll have that.
Right.
So we guide it, but it's not only about navigation. It's about creating this really safe container that welcomes people and sets a mindful intention for the experience. So there is a curriculum. There's a little, a facilitated experience. It's a little bit like a retreat on foot.
Okay.
But we don't push the mindfulness too much. It's really, setting an intention, walking with curiosity. I like to say we walk at the speed of curiosity, which means when we see something that interests us, we stop, we look, we talk about it. The guides that work with me are all trained to not engage too much in conversation about someone's situation. Like, are you married?
Yeah.
Do you have kids? Like I always say to people, don't ask them, are they married? Do they have kids?
Right.
Do they have a partner? What do they do? Let them have a little break from that.
Right.
Let them just be present. Mm-hmm. Let's be interested in looking at this body of water.
Mm-hmm.
Let some common interest that we have that seems to bubble up in conversation be what we talk about. Not to say that no one ever offers anything personal, but we just try to make it not about that. The reason behind that really is when I walked the Camino in Spain, you didn't know who you were talking to. Like someone's stats didn't matter.
No.
And you would get right down to the heart of things. Like, why are you walking? Oh, I'm walking because I'm in this moment in life. I mean, you'd meet people who are in transition, whether it's career transition, empty nesting, job change, they've lost someone, so many things. And so people would jump right into that. And you knew full well that you might only walk with this person for a few minutes or a few hours, or maybe you would, stick with them for a couple of days or weeks, but you got right to it,
Let me ask you this, and maybe the environment of nature and being present allows you to get to that level of intimacy, if I dare call it that. And there's also a safeness in knowing I might never see that person again, but I'm talking about what brought me.
You might tell people that you're walking with, at least on the Camino de Santiago, and I've seen it happen on Berkshire Camino Walk as well. Mm-hmm. You might divulge things that you don't talk about with your best friends and family.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But it's interesting that we, as humans, we can do that when it's a safe space. And part of the safeness is that they don't know anything about you and you don't know anything about them. And
right.
So you can just talk about how you feel in the moment, is pretty big.
Right.
So how large are the groups that your guides take people through the Berkshire Camino?
So they're for the day hikes, it's usually either 7 people or 10 people.
Yeah.
And then for our multi-day journeys, which are debuting this year, we're going to have one in May, one in June, and potentially September and October.
Oh my gosh.
Those are 11 people.
Okay. And by multi-day, what are they?
Yeah. So it's really going to approximate that feeling of what it's like to be in Spain and go on this multi-day trek. There will be inns that we're staying at along the way.
Okay.
So you'll check into an inn. We'll have a welcome reception to get to know one another. We'll walk each day. We'll have lunch together. Usually we'll have a picnic somewhere or a box lunch, or maybe we'll eat somewhere in one of the towns that we pass through if we're passing through a town.
Okay.
And then in the evening, guests will often have a little bit of free time, maybe time to have dinner on their own or with people that they have met.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intentionally creating some spaciousness so that the introverts in particular feel like they've got a little bit of time when they don't have to be with the group the whole time.
Yeah.
I know what that feels like as an introvert myself. Yeah. So we'll be walking for 3 straight days.
Okay.
And so you'll have your arrival night. So there will be 4 nights of lodging. But over time, we're going to grow that. 5 days, 7 days, we're just getting started.
Now you mentioned that Berkshire's is very forested. Is it also hilly?
It is. It's hilly.
Yeah. It's a pretty walk.
Yeah. And some of our routes are flatter than others. Part of what I've learned so much along the way since I launched the business in the summer of 2020, I've learned that sometimes people don't want a longer walk. First of all, it might be just too much physically for them.
Okay.
Or they don't want to spend their entire day doing just a Berkshire Camino experience. They want to do that in the morning, and then they want to have lunch somewhere, and then they want to do something else in the afternoon. Sure. So we have walks that range from about 2.5 hours up to 5 hours. So if you want something that's just a shorter segment, you can do that. And so we've identified the favorite parts of some of the walks and turned those into the shorter versions. So
I love that.
Yeah. So like you could walk from Edith Wharton's home, The Mount, which is a Gilded Age home. Edith Wharton was a female writer, actually the first to ever win the Pulitzer Prize.
First woman.
Yeah. Oh,
goodness, I didn't know.
So
that.
We start on the grounds of the Mount. We walk through the gardens and we, you know, lift up the story about the Gilded Age, which now more and more people are knowing about because of Downton Abbey and the Gilded Age show on HBO. And so we walk through the grounds there. And then there's a woodland part of the Mount's property that most people don't even know is there. They think the property ends at the end of the gardens, but it doesn't. There are trails all through the woods.
Goodness.
So we cut through the woods. It's beautiful. And then we come out at the edge of a little lake, Laura Lake, which is in Lee. So at this point, you've actually crossed the border into Lee.
Okay.
We walk up a country road and we go to High Lawn Farm, which is a 100-year-old dairy farm. Again, there's a Gilded Age home on that property.
Good.
And it's lovely. And they're very welcoming and open to the public. They want you to come. And so we go and visit the cows in the milking barn. We go and visit the calves in the nursery. We actually have a sponsored cow there. Her name was Camino.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's a big girl now. She actually had her birthday 2 days ago. And we're going to have another cow this year. But last year I named the cow and this year I'm going to let our guests help. So when we get to the farm, we go look for, you know, Berkshire Camino sponsored cow.
Yeah. With a baby calf, you know, that's.
I know. They're so cute. They're so cute. And they all have names, you know, like really sweet names. And then we go up to the little shop. They have the Farmstead Creamery store where they're, you know, the cheeses and milk and ice cream that are made right there, you know, at the farm are available to sample or purchase. And we have, you know, an arrangement both with the Mount that we can park our cars there, that we can walk through the property, that when we get to the farm, they welcome us there. They offer a discount to our guests. So I make arrangements with all of these various venues whose grounds we walk through so that, you know, they're all, you know, a part of it.
Have your guests come from all over?
Yeah. I mean, most of the people...
2020 was... The beginning. No, let's see. Where are the beginning.
2020. Yeah. We'll talk about why that happened then and why it's a tour company. Because remember, I left something in the parking lot for us to come back to, which was I was going to open hostels.
Yes.
I came back from my second Camino,
committed
to this idea that I think maybe I want to open a hostel or maybe a couple of hostels.
Tell people what a hostel is, because some people.
Yes. So hostels. Yeah, hostels are usually very small occupancy lodging places. Some are very large, but you know, on the Camino de Santiago, they're small, often very communal. Think bunk beds, you know, shared rooms, communal space, very much about being a part of a community. So whereas if you would go into a hotel, you might walk through the lobby, but you know, you're going to your room and you're shutting the door. Well, in a hostel, it's all about being a part of community.
Okay.
And in fact, when you walk the Camino in Spain, the community experience for me happened more when I was in the hostels than walking, because I was often walking alone because I walk so slow. I was meeting more people in the evening, actually, right? And so I wanted to, you know, work on this idea. I had already done an entrepreneurship program through an organization in the Berkshires called One Berkshire through their economic development program called Berkshire Starts. And I had a little bit of a sense that this might have some legs, but I didn't really know how to move forward. And I knew I didn't have the financial wherewithal myself to do it. Now, mind you, this whole time, I mean, I had a couple of part-time jobs along the way, but I've been living off of my early distribution from my IRA this whole time, right? So I thought, well, I need to really, like, I need to do something. I either need to launch a business and get it going, or I need to go find like a real job. But yeah. Couldn't go back. It's like I had gone so far down this path that I just didn't see going back into the corporate kind of path again. So I happened to learn about an organization called Entrepreneurship for All. The short for that is E for All. And they have chapters in several states, mostly in Massachusetts, but they are expanding nationally. They have, you know, Arkansas, Colorado, New York, they have chapters, and they provide education and mentorship for budding entrepreneurs. And so I applied for the program. I got in.
So did you come in with the hostel idea?
Hostels. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I started working on that. So the program started in January of 2020. And we were getting ready to do our pitches, and you can compete for grant money. I had already gotten to a point where I was having my reckoning with the fact that, you know, this is going to take hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, to acquire a property, mm-hmm. renovate it properly, build the brand, like, and so I knew I really, but it just didn't feel like I could take that step. And there was, you know, long range, I mean my mentors and I, mm-hmm. had talked about the possibility of having guided tours as part of it. But that was going to be like, you know, several years down the road, a side business. As we were getting ready to do our final pitches, and it's interesting because I remember the night, it was the last night that we met in person as a cohort, and I wasn't feeling well. And within a couple of days, I was sick. And I'm pretty sure I had COVID, but at that time, we could only get tested if you had been to China. So I suffered through it. And, you know, it took me a couple months to like really pull through it. And so I did my pitch and I said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I guess I'll tell you what I've been working on with the hostels, but I think I'm probably going to have to do something else. And so I walked away from that and thought, well, I could try the tour business. Mm-hmm. And I had been hesitant to do that. I felt resistant because as a pilgrim who walked solo on the Camino de Santiago without a tour company and felt like I didn't need a tour company, I was resistant. Like, well, why do I want to start a tour company? It's a different scenario here in terms of what I have already laid out. And so I came up with two routes. You know, I did a proof of concept test and I, you know, put a website up. I'd never done that before. I mean, I've learned all sorts of things that I didn't know before, continuing to learn. Yeah. That first year, I gave a lot of the walks away and was grateful for the people who did show up. I was so delighted by the people who showed up, who just magically heard about this. They did a search on the internet, thought it was cool, paid their way and came. It was like, wow, like people are coming. This is great. This is great. And they were really loving it. So then in 2021, we expanded to, I don't know, I think we had 7 or 8 routes last year. And started also offering private opportunities. So if the day and the time or the distance or where we're walking doesn't serve you, or if because of COVID in particular, you want to just come with your friends or your family, we can do that. And so we started offering privates.
I love this. This is perfect. Yeah. This was a perfect setup. You're outside.
That's right.
Have a small group as you need or want. So,
right. I mean, we can social distance on the trail and, you know, in the van, we wear masks and even this year we'll continue to wear masks in the van, but we have the windows open, we're ventilating, but, you know, just out of a predominance of safety.
Absolutely.
You know, we'll do that. But yeah, it's a pretty COVID friendly business. And of course, I can't get over how many times people showed up and said, this is the first thing that I'm doing with other people.
Wow.
You know, and it felt safe enough because we're outside, but they were really excited to be a part of a group and meet some new people. So
talk about the joy though of, I hear this so often, and maybe it's not joy for you, but I hear this from so many women who have something of their own versus working in a corporate environment. What's different? What's the feeling you get from having your own business? And you can bring in the challenges if you want to. Everyone, you know, there are huge differences, huge challenges.
For sure.
But talk first about what does it feel like to have something of your own?
It's amazing to allow my vision to actually mean something. And to not have to defend it, to not have to pitch it to other people to get their approval, to not have to modify it based on what they think is right. I do modify it as I learn from my crew and as we learn from guests. I always say this is a beta test. Like, it's always going to be a beta test. It has to be. A good business person is like that. You know, you have to keep listening and shifting. I get to take this crazy vision that I have and let it come to life. And it allows me to create a way of working that really suits me well, rather than being at work at 8 a.m. and taking lunch at noon, you know, needing to sit there for the solid 8 hours. I'm able to, if it's not working, if I'm sitting here and I'm trying to do something, I know I can allow myself to go do something else. Maybe it is going out and scouting a route, and having that agency means so much, so much. Yeah.
It's incredible. So where are you going with this? Tell us all where you see.
Yeah. The big vision features the multi-day journeys. Potentially hostels will come as part of that. We've got, you know, quite an infrastructure of lodging places in the Berkshires.
Okay.
That ranges from, you know, your basic economy, corporate kind of franchise place to unique inns, some of which are more luxurious than others. And it just so happens that over COVID, a number of those inns have been changing hands and new people are coming in and infusing a lot of money and bringing them to a whole new level, which is exciting and yet making it even more financially out of reach for a lot of people. And then there are some very high-end resorts that are here, destination resorts. And so I see a real niche for these hostels because it's much more economical. And it's this different mindset. Like I was saying before, you're in this place, but you're feeling like you're part of a community while you're there.
Yeah.
And it's really well suited to people who are doing a long distance hike. And I'll also note that I don't know if you're aware of this, or certainly for the people that are listening, the Appalachian Trail runs through the Berkshires.
It's about
a 2,200 mile trek. There are also people who are coming through hikers and section hikers. So section hikers are people that aren't trying to walk from Georgia to Maine, but they maybe are walking just the Massachusetts section. Okay. I know that's a popular thing to do. And I think we can support people that aim to do that. But walking the AT is very different from what we're doing in that that's more of a backpacking experience.
Okay.
And people are camping out. They're creating a fire. They're cooking over fire. They're carrying their food. With Berkshire Camino, we're staying in inns. We're eating in restaurants.
Right.
You know, we're staying in the town. We stay in the towns at night, even though during the day we might walk, you know, through woodland areas.
And all ages?
My target audience is women age 50 plus. And we do get people of all ages, but typically the people who show up are women 50 plus. Sometimes with a partner who's a man or a woman, but just like in Spain, that's quite common. You tend to see younger people in their 20s who are maybe in a gap year, or they're just trying to figure out what they want to do in life. And then you find the people who are in their third chapter of life and they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's sort of this common denominator. So I find when we get to this age where, you know, we want to be really intentional, like on a new level, like, hey, you know, time is running out.
Yeah. Do you feel that, Mindy, that and all the people that you interact with, which are part of the Berkshire Camino family, really, that there is something happens, at least to some women or most women, and we need to listen to it. Like you said, time is short, time is running out, or you have that sense. You might have 30, 40 more years, who knows? But you start to think about, well, what am I doing here? Is that, would you agree?
I would agree. And also, as you were speaking, Sherry, the thought came to mind to say what to do with the precious time. You know, so it's not only a matter of, and I guess I'll say this as I'm thinking it through. Now it's my time, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe we've, you know, gone down a certain path because that's what made sense. And it often involves family and children and commitments that we've made to a career, but you can, you know, step away from that. I'm not saying that everyone should go step away from all of it like I did.
Right. Or I did to a great extent. But there's something about that this is even giving yourself permission to say, what is it you want?
Right.
You know, that feels, some women talk about it, feels a little selfish. And yet it's there's yearning there at a certain age. It's like, okay, I've done all that. I've taken care of everyone. And hopefully you're not in a position where you have to take care of parents or something of that sort. What about it? Yeah.
It's like, it's me time, right? Like often we as women define ourselves by how we care for others. Mm-hmm. And not that that isn't very important.
Yes.
Very important. But how have we shown up for ourselves and creating space for ourselves? I look forward to the women who come alone, who have never done it before, that don't know if they can do it, and who say, I'm just going to give it a try. And I feel like this is a safe place where I can maybe like not be who people think I am. That's the joy of traveling alone, right?
Yes.
Because you can play around with what your persona is.
Yeah. And I think in many ways, who you really are rises to the surface because you have no role to play. You have, in some way, you have no one to take care of. You don't have to be brave if you're, you know, scared out of your wits. We can do this. You can say, no, I'm not doing that. Scares me, or I don't want to do that, or I do want to do that. That's something I absolutely want to do. And Michigan, the state of Michigan, has some of the best travel language from an advertising standpoint. And they had one where this must have been, I don't know, 3-4 years, and it just touched me. And it was sort of that when you go someplace where no one knows you, you become who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
So how many, from a percentage standpoint, 50 plus women typically, but what percentage would you say are coming alone?
I'd say probably about half are coming alone. But people, you know, we have a lot of people coming with a partner, friend, mother, daughter.
So, but what's really beautiful about that is that sometimes we think we have to get somebody
to go.
Yeah.
Right? Or I don't want to be the only single person that's here.
Exactly.
Or solo person, you know, just because you come alone doesn't mean that you're single in terms of relationship status. Yeah. Make it feel really welcoming. Like, again, this is all like part of my intention that I'm drawing not only from my walks in La Camino, but also my time at Kripalu and seeing how masterfully they create a safe space. So I train our crew on something that we call the Big Warm Hug. And it starts virtually on the website. Hopefully it's communicating that this is a place where you're going to feel welcomed and safe. And when people are walking toward us, you know, at the meeting place where we're going to start the walk, as soon as they arrive, we acknowledge them and greet them and say hello and introduce them to the other people. Like that discomfort that you feel, especially if you're coming alone and you're an introvert, and then now there's this group of people. I don't like that feeling at all myself. So we try to include people, like bring them right into the fold from the start.
What's the process?
You book online. For all of our day hikes, and there are over 100 of them right now on our calendar.
Okay.
Yeah. Always on weekends. Okay. And then often we've got weekday hikes as well during the Berkshire's peak season, which starts in late June through August. For the multi-day journeys, I'm asking everyone to call me instead. I've set it up that way so that you can't book online for two reasons. One, I want us to start having a conversation, the guest and I, right from the start, so that I'm getting to know who they are, what they need. You know, they get to know me and Berkshire Camino, and they can ask their questions. I just don't like that sterile kind of, you've just made this commitment to do this multi-day experience that you've paid, you know, some more significant money for, and you didn't even talk to anybody about it. So we're doing it that way. It also saves our guests a little bit of money because there's a booking fee from the website. We use an interface that does our booking. If you've ever booked, you know, a tour, a concert, things like that, it's not unusual to have that, but the booking fee becomes a little expensive. So people can call us. But for the most part, this is all done.
Yeah,
it's, okay. You know, you answer a couple simple questions and pay by credit card. And and then you know, you get reminders, you get email confirmations and reminders, and you just show up.
And plan. so that it's not just a weekend. You might be doing the walks on the weekends. Maybe you have walks on one weekend, walks on the next weekend, and then you have things that you want to do.
Oh, I mean, if people, yeah, I mean, you know, thinking about people who are coming to the Berkshires, you know, this is one of many things you can do, but this is a really great, you know, recreational activity. This is the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. So they're, you know, based at Tanglewood. They, you know, their programming runs from the beginning of July through August. And then we've got Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival in nearby Beckett, which brings dance companies from all over the world. Like anyone who's a dancer in the dance world either aspires to dance at Jacob's Pillow or has. I was fortunate to have worked there for a summer when I was prepping for my Caminos. It was great to be able to be in that environment, learn from that organization, to see a lot of shows as an employee. But I worked in the evenings for the most part. And so I was able to train for my Camino, my second Camino during the day. I'd get up in the morning and I would do my hike, my training hike, and then I would go to work at night.
Yes.
But we've got theater companies here, world-class museums, the Norman Rockwell Museum, Mass MoCA in North Adams, the Clark in Williamstown. So there's a lot to see and do here year round, but in particular in the summer, and it gets really crowded.
Okay.
And it sells out. All indications are that this is going to be a huge summer here. People are starting to come back out. And
I have a comfort level with Europe that maybe someone else doesn't have. And so most of my children, and, you know, I have grandchildren, and they're all thinking of summer, you know, they're going to stay in the United States. So it's really an opportunity. I think all of us are sick of our backyards.
Yep.
At least that's what I hear my children say. We want to go someplace, and they want to get on an airplane maybe and go someplace.
Right.
But the Berkshires is such a beautiful place to go to because it really has something for everyone, whatever your interests are. If you're into the arts or you're into history or you're into hiking, the outdoor, or you're a foodie, it's
right.
A great area.
Great restaurants.
Table. I mean, they were doing farm to table before they even called it farm to table.
That's right. That's right. I'm so excited that you know that and you know to say that. That's very true. Yeah, it's true.
Wonderful area.
Yeah. And on our Berkshire Camino walks, we're going to sample a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Local beer and wine and cheese. And
yeah, this doesn't sound like a hardship trek. Like, you know, I think of, you know, blisters on my feet and bad shoes and a backpack. And
this is very supported. This is very supported. I mean, you don't have to wear a heavy backpack and carry all your stuff. I mean, if somebody chooses to, they're welcome to do that. But, you know, they'll probably have a day pack with snacks and a sweater, you know, you know, a rain jacket, you know, we'll transport their baggage to the next inn for them. And we'll even pick people up along the way if it's too much. We have one day where we're going to go from Stockbridge to Lee, have lunch in Lee, and then walk from Lee to Lenox. And that whole walk that day is about 10 miles. And that's the third day of the May walk, the town to town walk. And I think that's a great way for people to like really test, like, what would it feel like? Because very few of us have ever walked 10 miles in a day. But because it's very van accessible, if people feel like, you know what, I've really truly reached my limit, we're happy to pick you up. We will pick them up and take them to the inn.
Yeah.
So, but I bet even though it's going to be available, people are going to want to push through and
I think so too.
See what they can do.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
As long as your feet hold up and your back holds up, and depending upon whatever other issues you might have, it's just what an experience. Are you going to have certificates at the end?
I haven't got I'll be honest, there are still details that I'm working on, but yeah, sure. I think that would be fun.
I'm teasing.
Yeah. No, but I love it. I love it. Yeah.
So in closure, what would you say, and there might be several characteristics that a woman specifically needs to kind of go from, in your case, you went from corporate to entrepreneur, but think even of maybe a stay-at-home mother that said, mm-hmm. Now it's my time. What are those characteristics that somebody needs to tap into within themselves to create a business rather than just say, oh, someday I'll do that, or I'm going to write about that. Maybe I'll write that book someday, or I'll, I don't know, create something someday, but they don't ever get to it. So what was it about you that had you walked out of the past to some extent and then gave yourself this gap time to figure out what you wanted and then create it and move forward?
Yeah. You know, it comes from wanting to make every day count in the process. What if the someday doesn't come, or life has changed and that someday looks really different?
Yeah. But what about core strengths, Mindy? What about?
Yeah, I think I am getting more comfortable with doing it scared.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting comment. Doing it scared. The ladies,
when I decided to walk the Camino, that's a scary thing to do. But and you know, when I was walking, you'll often see these maps up on the wall, like huge murals of, you know, where you are and where Santiago de Compostela is. And it's very overwhelming. I didn't want to even look at those maps, because you could really only take it like literally the step, sometimes the step, the next step that you're taking. Mm-hmm. Not even the next town that you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. And I apply that to my life now by knowing there's big things, you know, ahead of me. There's lots I need to do, even to get ready for these multi-day journeys, but I can only take it a step at a time. And when you break it down to those little pieces, you can do that. You can take that next step and then the next step. And the more I am mastering that methodology for how to live my life and run my business, the more I feel like I can say yes to.
Wow. But it's so interesting to me that this Camino de Santiago map is kind of a metaphor of this process of, I can't look at the big, huge picture, because actually that's daunting. Mm-hmm. Going to do what I can do every single day, and then I will get wherever it is.
Right. And of course, like, we know we're walking to quote unquote Camino to Santiago de Compostela. We know there's an endpoint, there is a goal. We know we've done research, we've prepared. It's not like we're doing this without any thought, but not becoming overwhelmed by the enormity of ideas that we come up with. And everyone's definition of what their enormity is different.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I mean, for some people, it's walking out of the house, you know.
Right. For some people, it's the half day. It's the 2.5 hour Berkshire Camino walk. And for other people, it's the 3 day, you know, example. And the same, if you apply that to a business, you know, is however you're comfortable starting and whatever the resources are that you have to begin with. And the idea. And recognize that, I want to say that sometimes we don't end up where we think we're going to end up.
Right.
You know, so
totally.
Hey, with that, I may not get to that church, but today I'm walking.
Yeah.
And
sometimes you find that bench that you say, you know what, I did my best.
Yeah.
And now I'm ready to surrender and see what comes next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. And to embrace that pivot when that happens, like to not beat ourselves up over it and to say, you know, because I could have easily said, I only made it halfway, boohoo, I failed. No, I was disappointed. I really like wanted to see if I could do that 500. But I just, like, I knew then, but I really know now, that was just really, it was really overreaching for what my body was able to do and maybe is ever going to be able to do.
Well, maybe,
but that doesn't discount what I did.
No, it doesn't. And maybe in the big scheme of things, you really don't want to do 500. Your body says, honey, you're not doing 500.
You know? And I didn't need it. Like, I had been out for a month on this journey. Yeah. Like that was enough.
That was enough. Yeah. Yeah. So that's important also when we think of businesses, because at least in America, we always want to get things so big. Everything's got to be big, you know? And so the idea of starting a business is like, oh my God, it's going to be so big. And it might never be huge. It might be something that's perfect for you, whatever that is that you want to do. You'll find your joy somewhere in whatever it is that you end up choosing to pursue. Mm-hmm. So, Mindy, thank you. This was
thank
so
you.
Great. I'm going to have all kinds of information in the show notes so that people know how to get in touch with you and some, myself included. And but thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been so fun. I hope when you're back in Boston, you will come out.
I will.
Come for a walk.
Yeah, this is on my, I have bucket lists now that are short-term bucket lists. And my summer bucket list is to get out to the Berkshires. Yeah. So we're going to do that.
Awesome. Yeah. I look forward to that.
I'm going to be on the 3-day, but I might be on one of those shorter ones.
Yeah.
I have to start somewhere.
Right.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. And if you liked our conversation, please give me a review because reviews matter in the podcast world. And do come back for more. Now, let me ask you, how is your year going? Are you ready to do it different this year? Well, the Extraordinary Women Magazine Circle is just what you need if you are committed to making this the year you get started on your dream business. The Extraordinary Women's Circle, which includes this podcast, but also the must-have Extraordinary Women digital magazine for women who are looking for inspiration, for tips, support to create that fabulous business and take their dreams from, you know, up there in dreamland to reality. The Extraordinary Women's Circle, like I said, is here to support women to imagine, to plan, and then do the business. In the Extraordinary Women's Circle, which includes the magazine and this podcast, you will hear inspiring stories of women who are not celebrities, but real women like you who have chosen to not just dream about starting a business, but to actually do it. Now, the Extraordinary Women magazine has much more than interviews in it. It's really focused on what I call your business blueprint. You'll get coaching tips, you'll get ideas, as well as the inspiration you need to get started. And if you already have a business, those ideas and insights that others share might just give you a new idea, a new revenue stream, or a business that you want to start. Plus, and this is so important, there are included in the magazine tips and tricks to help you with the dreaded imposter syndrome that honestly always seems to creep into your mindset no matter where you are on your business journey. The bottom line is the Extraordinary Women magazine is all about helping you to create and grow your own super successful business. Now, if you are a woman ready to get moving on that big audacious dream business that you have, go to extraordinarywomenmagazine.com and sign up. It's only $29.99, and as a subscriber, you will receive 4 quarterly issues of the magazine. Plus, you will get special videos, you'll get tip sheets, and all kinds of communication to help you and support you to move forward and be highly successful with your business. Now, I want to thank you for your precious time today. Your time is your most important resource in creating your dream life. So thank you for spending a few of your minutes today with me. Now, I'm currently in Paris, so I'll say a bientôt, and to everyone back in the States, see you soon. Thank you for listening today. If you want to hear more, just tune in every Monday for a new episode. And if you felt this podcast was helpful, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on any conversations and that you also get notified when we have special gatherings. If you liked this episode, please share it with another extraordinary woman. And if you have a moment, I very much appreciate you leaving a review. Now, if you want to hear more about the Extraordinary Women magazine, which includes much more than just the magazine, reach out to me via social media or join us at sherryharmel.com. I look forward to our next conversation, and I hope you do too.